This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
It's my pleasure to welcome Seth M. Siegel to the show. He is the New York Times bestselling author of Let There Be Water, Israel's Solution for a Water-Starved World. He's a lawyer, a businessman, and an activist. Seth, welcome. How are you?
I'm terrific. Glad to be here.
It's good to have you on the show. So what is going on with the water problem around the world, and namely in Israel?
Well, there is no water problem in Israel. That's why Israel's a model for a world that's actually having a lot of problems right now. The problem is that around the world, we face a situation where, because of growing population, rising affluence, climate change, lots of pollution, and really failed infrastructure, as well as really, really bad governance and regulation all over the world is about to descend into a big water crisis. And the thesis of my book is that if we don't fix it soon, we're going to pay a very, very big price. But that isn't necessarily bad news, because Israel, which is 60% desert and has a fast-growing population, dynamic economy, is able to do enough with its water that it exports quite a bit of it to the Palestinians and to Jordanians, and has a robust agricultural export industry, all of which bespeaks a very dynamic water present and water future, which is kind of unbelievable given the fact that it is basically a desert country.
Yeah, it really is. Well, Israel is an amazing country, period. I mean, I was there about 15 years ago, was very impressed, of course. What is Israel's main source of water? Is it aquifers, desalinization? Of course, desal takes a lot of energy, a lot of power to do that. Tell us about their source and why it's so effective.
Well, what Israel does that's so special is they have what I would call an all of the above strategy. And in the book, I lay out how that got developed. It's developed first in the 1930s, and they have spent decades fine-tuning a really brilliant water system. But what they use is a combination of lots of different techniques. Conservation is a very significant part of what they do, but that doesn't mean that people are deprived. People can use all the water they want as often as they want. There's 24/7 on-demand, healthy, clean water always available. But the reality of the society is that people know they have to pay for their water, unlike in much of the rest of the world where water is either free or functionally free. So conservation plays a large part. In addition, Israel really has mastered some really brilliant technologies. They are the inventors of drip irrigation. And given the fact that agriculture is the largest user of water, it's pretty significant that Israel has the ability to teach the world about how they should be growing crops. In Israel, their farms are overwhelmingly drip irrigated, about 75%. Zero are flood irrigated, unlike the U.S., where a very large percentage are flood irrigated. And that smarts about saving water saves a great deal of water, because in the U.S., about 70% of our total water is used for agriculture. And if we could cut that by, say, 20%, we would have such a robust amount of water for our cities and our parks and our environment that agriculture could really lead the way for us. So we've chosen not to do that foolishly. Now, in terms of the source of all this, your question was, is that Israel has aquifers. They have surface water. But what they really have done brilliantly is they've figured out a way to manufacture water. They take their sewage, and in a way unlike anyone else in the entire world, they treat that sewage to an ultra, ultra, ultra high level of quality. You could drink it if you had to, but you don't have to. And then they reuse it for agriculture. So about 60% of Israel's agriculture is irrigated with treated sewage, which right now we don't do much of in the U.S., but I predict for you within 10 or 15 years, it will be as common in the U.S. as it is in Israel. In addition, they desalinate some water, and they use lots of other techniques too.
Is the right word, or is there some distinction to it? Is it, do you just call that reclaimed water, the sewage water?
Well, there's lots of names for it. It's treated wastewater. It's reclaimed water. It's sometimes called manufactured water. sometimes called resourced water, sometimes called treated effluent. There's lots of names for it, but whatever you call it, let's just say that it's the best possible thing you could do, because every drop then gets to be reused over and over and over again. You have the stuff out of your sink, out of your toilet, out of your shower, out of your washing machine, out of your dishwasher. Right now, it just gets treated and dumped into the ocean or river. If you're in California, it's dumped into the Pacific. If you're in New York, it's dumped into the Atlantic. If you're in the middle of the country, it's dumped into the nearest river you have. That's really wasteful. And in Israel, they take it, they reuse it, and then they grow crops with it. And then after they've grown the crops, they reuse it one more time and another time and another time. So a drop could last 6, 7, 8 times before it gets lost.
Sure, sure. You talked about it being an all of the above strategy. Can you break down just even roughly what some of those percentages of are of the different methods that Israel's using?
Well, sure. I go through all that in my book. The big three really are drip irrigation, which has transformed agriculture. They treat 95% of their sewage. 5% goes to septic tanks, but 95% gets treated, and then 86% of that gets reused for agriculture, which is pretty remarkable. And then their desalinated water represents about more or less about half of all of the domestic water in the country. All in all, if you want to look at it as a pie chart, 2/3 of Israel's water is either treated water or desalinated water or otherwise repurposed water. And so that's what's kind of amazing, is that Israel relies on its aquifers, its rainfall, and its rivers and lakes for about 1/3 of its total water consumption. Pretty rare in the world.
That's amazing. Tell us a little bit more about the drip irrigation and maybe why that's not being done around the world, especially in the U.S. Look, I live in Southern California. I live in San Diego, California, La Jolla. I mean, you know, water is it's a huge issue here. Why aren't we doing that? I mean, California is the agriculture capital of the U.S. It just seems crazy that we're not doing that. Is it just too expensive to install the drip systems? What is the issue with that? What is preventing it?
Well, what largely is presented historically is that if something costs a penny and something is free, the thing that costs a penny is expensive in comparison. So although drip irrigation equipment is not terribly expensive, we have functionally treated our water as free in this country. So if I tell somebody that they can't flood their field and they have to buy drip irrigation equipment and they're adjacent to either a water source like a river or a lake, you're going to say, what, are you crazy? I'm going to buy my water for free. I just pump it out and I use it. And so Californians are rational people. And as long as water is treated as a free good like sunshine or air, there's almost no chance they're going to adopt technologies that cost them money. Even so, by the way, there are enough farmers who are not adjacent to a water source who have started doing so. And now about 40-odd% of California agriculture uses drip irrigation. And that's a big step forward from just a few percentage points a few years ago.
Yeah, it sure is. You know, the predictions were many years ago that electricity would be so cheap that it would be too cheap to bother to charge anybody for it, too cheap to meter. And this is essentially what you're saying has happened with water, right? It's just too cheap. Nobody much cares because unless it's expensive, there's just, you know, it's not given much value, is it?
Well, that's precisely the point, is that as long as water is treated like something free, then why would anyone worry about it? It's kind of like, I give the example of if you're ever going to a hotel room and you're leaving for dinner or you're leaving for going to the gym, assiduously shut all the lights in your hotel room as you do when you're home. You probably don't. You might, but you probably don't, because it's a free good. When you are sitting in a restaurant, when the waiter or waitress comes up to you and says to you, can I get you something to drink? And they pour you a glass of water. You know, if I can get you something to drink, there's a charge to it. If they said to you, I'm prepared to pour you a glass of water, but that will cost you 10 cents or 25 cents or a dollar, I wonder how many people would say, sure, pour away. It's just a wasteful mentality.
Right. What you're saying makes total sense. Are you a believer in free market economics? I'm wondering why the market hasn't addressed this. Just somehow has slipped through the cracks and the marketplace hasn't said, hey, look, there's a shortage of this stuff. We got to start charging more for it. Doesn't that just happen in marketplaces?
Well, I am a believer in free market economics, but I'm not an ideologue. I'm a pragmatistic kind of guy. I like to say what works, and sometimes market-based approaches work. I think they tend to work best, but sometimes government-based approaches work best. In Israel, 100% of the water is controlled by the government. It's not given over to private sources to handle as they see fit, and that's worked out pretty well for Israel. But in other areas like innovation, Israel uses free market. In terms of pricing, Israel uses the free market. So it seems like we should take a non-ideological and pragmatic approach to how we handle our water, and you'll get a great outcome. That's what they did in Israel.
Yeah, okay.
By the way, I hasten to add that you'd mentioned before about metering electricity.
Sure.
You know, Israel in the 1950s, before there was a concept of big data, Israel passed a law in the, I think it was 1954. I write about this in my book briefly, because the book is really not a story about legislation or engineering. The book is really an inspiring story of how a country overcame insurmountable obstacles in terms of water scarcity, and now not only has a good water present, but is a model for the whole world. I mean, that's really the story here. But in 1954, Israel passed a law that no water was permitted to pass from point A to point B without it flowing through a meter first. And I've interviewed a bunch of people who were involved with that, and they said that they had no idea that they'd be collecting the kind of data that they did. But that data collection not only allowed them to charge for water ultimately, but it also gave them a sense of where the water is being used and how. And decades before big data and macro and micro processing had started, they were thinking about water in a way that we weren't. And that's a pretty healthy thing.
Yeah. So are there any more incentives that you want to share, incentives that incentivize the right behavior with water, whether they be Israel or otherwise, or some additional examples of smart regulation?
Well, there's all kinds of stuff. I mean, you start with the idea of teaching in schools. I share with the reader in the book as just a mindset that in America, we say rain, rain, go away, come again some other day. That's what we teach our nursery schoolers. In Israel, there's a comparable nursery rhyme, which I share with the reader, which it rhymes in Hebrew, which it says, look at the sky, it's raining. What joy, clap hands, clap hands.
Different perspective, huh? Yeah.
And so we need to start having that approach. Also in schools and in Israel, starting in the nursery program, they teach children to brush teeth and to bathe in such a way that they're very efficient with their water. And I think that's the mindset that allows you to have all the water you need or want, and at the same time to not run out of water.
Yeah, absolutely. Good points. Talk to us, if you would, for just a moment, Seth. In the book, I know you explore some of the technologies deeply. Talk to us about the technologies a little bit, if you would, and what's going on now and desalinization and wastewater and reclaiming water. Those will be the big ones, obviously. In a lot of ways in things, you know, we look at the world and we think, oh, you know, Malthus was right. Resources are scarce. But then some technological innovation comes along and rescues us all, maybe just in time. Do we have that with water? You know, is something coming down the pipe here that is going to really change things? Or is this, we really need to get on the game now and start conserving?
Well, I don't think that Malthus was right. And I think the marketplace has proven him wrong in generation after generation, whether it's the sense that, you know, the population bomb, and therefore we have to limit our population, not to stray into foreign policy, but, you know, China just revoked its one-child policy because they realized that this Malthusian approach they had basically was the doom of their economy.
It's going to be a disaster. In 10, 15 years, China is going to be in a lot of trouble due to that policy. But yeah.
So that's just one example. So I would say that exactly what the model is from Israel, and not just Israel, but in terms of water, very much from Israel, is the idea that with proper planning, with proper incentives, with encouragement of technology, and I could talk about what Israel's done in that area, it's really quite remarkable the outcomes that you get. As I said, you have a country that is majority desert, the rest of the country is semi-arid, and yet somehow they have so much water that they're able to give the Palestinians of the West Bank 55% of their water from Israeli sources, and even the Palestinians in Gaza, while they're shooting rockets at Israel, are getting water from Israel every single day. So that's a real statement about this. I mean, in Jordan right now, again, to talk about foreign policy a little bit, you know, we know that there's about 1 million refugees from the Syrian civil war. Well, Jordan never really planned for their water future in a way comparable to Israel. They're starting to do so now, but they really never did. And so they have 1 million people, 1 million refugees now who arrived. And Jordan was really in a very tight spot. How are we going to provide water for these people and still provide for our own people? And Israel stepped up very quietly. I don't know if you've ever seen a news story about this, but Israel stepped up very quietly and now provides most of the water for those refugees. And that was only possible because of the fact that Israel spent decades putting it all together. Now, the problem for us, and the reason why we have to face a very large problem here in the U.S., is that it takes at least 10 years from the time you make a decision to go and do something about your water until it's fixed, at least 10. You could argue that it's even 20 years. And therefore, we've got nothing but massive problems in California and in the high plains. We're pumping our aquifers at an alarmingly fast rate. we're going to have fabulously disastrous implications for our agriculture, for our business, for population in the middle of the country. I think that if we don't start immediately, we're going to find ourselves completely in a disastrous situation. I think this thing that our leaders don't know much about, don't know enough about, aren't talking about, media, thank you for doing this interview, but media on average doesn't do a lot of this, and we need to get focused on it. I'll say another thing, because I know you have a business-focused listenership. I mean, I'd challenge your listeners to do the following exercise. Take whatever daily newspaper you like to look at, whether online or actual physical paper, and for 5 days, Monday through Friday, take the paper, go to the business section.
You're not going to see anything about water, yeah, right?
Yeah, well, go to the business section and see how many days in a row you have to go without seeing an article about energy, coal, oil, gas, or renewables.
Yep.
And I would venture to say that you never have to go more than one complete day without seeing such a news article.
Right.
And then look for an article about water. And I defy you to find even two in a week.
And I bet you're absolutely right. Yeah, it's a big deal. I agree with you. I think it deserves tons of media attention. It just isn't getting it. I saw a documentary about water that I watched maybe a year or two ago. It's startling. I mean, this is a real problem. Why is everybody ignoring it?
Why is everybody ignoring it? Well, that's why I wrote Let There Be Water. And the thinking is that water is not a certainty. And that's why I chose the title. You know, some people think it was a joke that I said, let there be water, sort of like the biblical, let there be light. But I really meant it as let there be water, because I don't think we're guaranteed a safe water future at all. And this may be the classic example of our elected officials, our media, and our civic leaders letting us down. I think it's really quite disastrous what's going on.
Well, good job getting the word out about it. Seth, please give out your website so people can find you. Of course, the book's on Amazon and so forth, but also your website.
Yeah, I'll give you a couple of points of contact for me. First of all, I love hearing from listeners, whether in my audience. I speak very widely around the country. I speak several times a week. And you can find those locations and lots of other information on my website, which is www.seth, S-E-T-H-M, like Mary, Siegel, S-I-E-G-E-L.com. I tweet about water between 5 and 15 times a day. It's a bit of a twitch.
That's good.
@ Seth M, like Mary again, Siegel, S-I-E-G-E-L. Very eager to hear from you. There's all kinds of stuff that I refresh all the time on my website. I write a weekly blog. I have a weekly podcast. Glad to talk about water with anybody. And again, water doesn't have to be a dreary, dull, boring, civil engineering kind of quantitative subject. Water is life. Water is inspiring. And telling the story of heroic individuals who are providing a water future for us is a great story for all of us.
I think that's a very good point. Seth, thank you so much for joining us and getting the word out about this problem. The book's on Amazon, of course, with excellent reviews. Seth Siegel, thanks for joining us.
A real pleasure. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us today for the Holistic Survival Show, protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Be sure to listen to our Creating Wealth show, which focuses on exploiting the financial and wealth creation opportunities in today's economy. Learn more at www.jasonhartman.com or search Jason Hartman on iTunes. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, offering very general guidelines and information. Opinions of guests are their own, and none of the content should be considered individual advice. If you require personalized advice, please consult an appropriate professional. Information deemed reliable, but not guaranteed. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.